The Thrive Podcast, led by faith to elevate His name, encourage the body of Christ, enrich our families, and serve our brothers and sisters through hard work and with integrity, bringing glory to God. This is how we thrive. And now, your host, Casey Majorca.
All right, in the studio tonight, we have Desiree Jackson and Paulette Chausse. How you doing today?
Good.
Doing good, Casey.
Great. Well, thanks for coming out to the Arctic studio today. It's a little cold. Kind of a special show on this one. Wanted to have them come out and tell their story about Kasaya. The whole family's been going to the church for a long time. She's been going through a lot of trouble, and we wanted to give an opportunity to be able to hear her story, some of the struggles, and also some of the things that are happening in order to help her with her struggles. So could you go ahead and tell us a little bit of the backstory? What is Kasaya's story?
When Kasaya was young, probably around 8 years old is when I first noticed her having some behavior difficulties, kind of acting out in school, things that we weren't really understanding. I took her to a counselor to be evaluated. After they evaluated her, they diagnosed her with depression. She was 8 years old. Neither of us really understood what depression to an eight-year-old meant or how to deal with it. We did continue to see that counselor for a period of time, and things seemed to get a little bit better. Kasaya never really talked a whole lot in the counseling session. She would more like to talk to me about how she was feeling, things that were going on in her head. Even from that young age, she would talk about having feelings like she wanted to die. I didn't really understand it. I would tell her, you know, that's not something that we want to joke about. Dying is a permanent thing, and it's not something that you would just want to talk about. But I noticed that the feelings never really went away. They would come up again and again. She continued with counseling. She seemed like a happy-go-lucky girl to everybody else. We kind of just went on with life, and after a few months, stopped seeing that counselor. She was always a very emotional girl, whether she was really happy about something or really upset about something. Emotionally, she was just kind of all over the place. When she was 9, she became a big sister, and that was pretty awesome for her. Things seemed to go pretty well for quite a few years. It wasn't until her preteens things started to really show up again. She had trouble making friends and keeping friends. Her self-esteem was really low. The thoughts of suicide came back. Things would set her off that didn't really make sense. She would just get so upset about something that seemed so little to everybody else. She would tell me that her, you know, things inside of her head just don't work the same as other people, that it's hard for her to explain what she was feeling or why she was feeling that way. Most of the time, she would only talk to me about it. She seemed only comfortable sharing those things with me. I didn't know exactly how to help her, but I took her back to counselors again and tried to get her to express to them how she was feeling. When Kasaya was 13, was the first time that her feelings got the best of her, and she took a bunch of ibuprofen. She came to me after a few minutes crying, saying that she had taken ibuprofen and she was scared and she didn't know what do we do. Took her to the emergency room, and while we were there, she saw a crisis counselor. And this was the first time I really realized how hard it was going to be to get her the real help that she needed. They referred us to a couple places. The first place, then they said that we couldn't go to because we didn't live in King County. And the other place that I called after getting home, discharged with her, was they told me that they couldn't help me either because I wasn't on state insurance. So I needed to just follow up with a private counselor again, which I did. And again, it didn't really seem to go anywhere. She'd never wanted to talk about what she was really feeling with anybody else. As a nurse, I was frustrated because I felt like I knew what this patient needed, my daughter, but I couldn't get anywhere. I couldn't figure out how to get her help. She was getting ready to start high school at that time, which is a really hard time for kids anyways. Academically in high school, Kasiah did great. She signed up for AP classes. She loved high school and how independent she kind of felt there going to her different classes. She was a beautiful girl and doing well, getting good grades. And by the end of freshman year, there was definitely some red flags for us as far as people she was choosing to hang out with, more talks with me of the way she was feeling depressive-wise, her self-esteem, although a gorgeous girl, she did not see that at all. She just only felt this ugliness inside of her. You know, she had fought to kind of keep going and keep this front of she had everything together, and then she slowly just let that fight go. The beginning of her sophomore year, there was a lot of issues with school. I was getting calls a lot from the school about her missing classes. In December, referred by the school to do a drug assessment. And at that time, when I confronted her about it, she was denied it. She said, well, you know, I've smoked marijuana twice. And I took her to the assessment. And when I got the call from them saying that they recommended outpatient treatment because they were concerned with the amount of friends she had that used drugs was their main reasoning. And I was kind of surprised. Kasiah, of course, said, I don't have a problem. I'm not going. And that's when I really realized there was nothing I could do to make her go, which was surprising, being the fact that she was only 15. In February of 2015, things got escalated to where she was rarely going to school. I was getting calls every day that she wasn't there. I pulled her out of school to put her in online school, thinking I needed to get her away from these friends that she was running off with. Shortly after that is when she ran away for the first time. And I had to deal with the nightmare of posting a missing persons ad on Facebook for my daughter. We called the local police department and filed a runaway report, and then we used social media to try to track her down for the next 40 hours. We interrogated all her friends. Everybody said they knew nothing. Nobody knew where she was. Didn't have a phone at the time because she was in trouble. I had taken it away. I had no way to get a hold of her. She wasn't responding to any Facebook messages. Finally, with some pressure from the police department on her supposed boyfriend, he got in contact with her and she came home. But she was not in the state I was thinking she was going to be when she came home. She wasn't even really scared of what had happened. She was upset. She was lost. It just seemed like I was losing her and I didn't know how to get her back. At that point, I looked into, okay, so people have told me it's time to get strict with your rules and you're going to live in this house. You're going to live by my rules. You're not going to run away. You're staying here. This is your home. You go to school. You're here at a certain time. This is it. And she said, well, then I'm not going to live here. And then what do? Because you realize you don't have that control anymore. They're a child, but if they're not thinking clearly and they think they know what they are doing, what exactly do? You don't go to sleep. You don't go to work. You just sit on them. I couldn't just let her tell me what she was going to do and run it like it was her house. So she left. And I figured, well, she was going to figure out that it wasn't very fun living out on her own after a couple days. And she would be back. And when a couple of days turned into a week, I realized I don't think she's going to think that this is so bad. I'm not sure what's going on. I'm confused. You never think this is going to happen in your life to your child. So I called the place that she had had her drug assessment at. And I said, look, I have a 15-year-old who's running away from home. I can't get her to stay home. I know she's using drugs. What do I do? And they said, well, in Washington State, everybody over 13 can make their decision as to whether they want substance abuse or mental health treatment. She said, we have an inpatient facility in Burien, but she would have to agree to go. And even if she did agree to go, she could decide she wanted to leave after a couple days. And I said, well, she doesn't think she has a problem. That's the problem. So there's nothing else. And she said, well, we have referred some parents to Oregon. In Oregon State, they have different laws, and there's a place that you can force her to go to. I said, okay, well, I need to know this place because I'm desperate. I have to do something. So I got the name of a facility in Portland. After about 3 weeks, I did finally get a call from Kasaya, and she said she was ready to come home. Maybe she was tired of living there, and she was going to come home, and her boyfriend was going to go home as well. So I went and picked her up and brought her home. She seemed happy. I was excited to have her back home. But I had just gotten a call that morning from this place in Oregon that said they had an opening. And I thought, well, that was convenient. She's back, and now they have an opening for her. God's kind of funny in his timing. So after about an hour of being home, she showered and then said, well, I want to go hang out with my friends, so you can just come back and pick me up later. Of course, I wanted to say no, but I knew I had to keep things smoothed over so that I could get her to the place in Portland, hopefully, that next day. We hired a transport team from Oregon that drove up and was going to get there early in the morning, wake her up, and take her to this place. So while she was hanging out with her friends, I packed her bags, and she came home and went to bed, and I laid there and stared at the ceiling all night thinking about the fact that I was having to get my own daughter kidnapped as the only way to get her help. They showed up and they took her. She didn't fight it. She was upset. She didn't understand what was going on. She told me later she thought it was one of those scared straight programs where she was going to go somewhere for a few hours and be back. After a couple days, she realized this was more long term. And the first time I talked to her, she spent about 20 minutes begging me to come pick her up. I talked to her counselor there, who was amazing, and I went and saw her the first time after she'd been there for about a week. She hugged me. She was crying, but she was happy. She told me thank you for sending her there. She felt like she was enjoying it. She went through about 5 weeks there of group counseling and psychotherapy and one-on-one counseling, and she really seemed to kind of become a new Kasaya. She worked a lot on her depression. She started on some antidepressants, and we were really hopeful for her transitioning back home. She was going to be in an outpatient program. I thought things were going to go well. She came home, and things did go well for a few weeks, but it didn't take long before she kind of fell back into old patterns. When you've struggled with something for your whole life, I think it's kind of hard to all of a sudden be better in a few weeks. She ran away again, and I found myself in the same predicament. I didn't know what to do. There was no help. Called law enforcement again. They came over and took the report. I asked them, you know, what do you do in cases like this when you can't get your child to stay home and you know that they have, you know, mental health issues, substance abuse issues, what do you do? And they said, well, you know, sometimes you can file some court petitions. You know, there's not a lot you can do. We just keep bringing them home. So after about a week of her being gone, I decided I needed to send her back to Portland, this time hopefully for a longer stay. After about 5 weeks there, insurance decided they were done paying and she must be better now, so time for her to go home. I paid out of pocket for a few more weeks because I knew she wasn't ready. And when she came home, I could see that she wasn't better. I mean, I didn't expect her to be better in a matter of weeks. And she took off again. And this is when it was really bad. She was no longer playing around. She was using hard drugs. She just was lost. She lost her way. She had no hope anymore. She didn't think that we could help her. These facilities obviously couldn't help her, so she was a lost cause. She didn't want to be home. She didn't want to hurt us. She didn't want to hurt her siblings. She really tried to limit even her contact with us because it was too painful for her. I didn't know what to do anymore because everybody kept telling me there was nothing I could do. So I just prayed and prayed and prayed. I just asked God to show me what I was supposed to do. Am I supposed to help her? Am I supposed to leave her out there so she can find her own way? I just don't know. She was actually out of our home for a couple months, maybe even a little bit more than that. And we were just waiting for her to hit rock bottom, as people say, and decide that she wanted to do something different. And then one day we thought we got the phone call. She called my mom and she said, "I'm done. I'm done. I'm scared." And she was at a mall and this couple had found her. And we found out later that it was a pastor's wife that was with her and talking with her. She was confused. She'd been living basically on the streets for a while. She was hallucinating. My mom showed up to get her. A friend of mine, who's been helping me a lot during this process, was able to call and find one of the only places that does adolescent detox in the state of Washington, found a bed for her. But the earliest time we could take her was about 6 hours from the time that my mom was picking her up. In that time, her mind was just playing tricks on her. She was paranoid. She thought people were after her. She thought she was going to be kidnapped. She didn't trust anybody. She told us, "My brain doesn't work right. I'm crazy. Something's wrong with me. I'm crazy. Just let me go." We ended up not being able to get her to detox that night, but she went to a friend's house, kind of local to where we stay. I went and saw her that night. She was at my mom's to try to talk her into going to detox. "Come on, just take the help. We'll do anything to help you. You just have to accept the help." But she wouldn't go. I had to leave her. And I went home. And I got down on my knees and I said, "I don't know what you want me to do anymore, because it's not working. I know you have a plan, but I don't see it and it's not working. So please do something and tell me what I need to do." Well, 2 days later, there was this plan. I got a phone call at 2 o'clock in the afternoon on a Friday from actually a young girl. It was about Kasaya's age, and her mom found her wandering around their neighborhood, still confused, hallucinating, paranoid, not making much sense. They let her use their phone to try to contact somebody, and she logged on to Facebook. They saw my messages to her in Facebook, and they called me through the Facebook Messenger, asked me who I was. They were very happy to find out I was her mom because they knew that's what she needed. I met up with them and had to convince Kasaya to get in my car. She was a mess. She hadn't eaten in I don't know how long, weeks. She hadn't slept. She wasn't making any sense. She told me she had to find her stuff. And so she had me circling around a neighborhood looking for a house. And in my mind, I was just thinking, how am I going to get her to the hospital? Surely if I can get her to the hospital and they see her like this, they're going to help. But I knew she wouldn't just let me drive her there because she was so scared and paranoid. She was high on drugs. So she finally found this house and got out of the car. While she was out of the car, I called my mom and I said, "You're going to have to call the police and tell them to just pull me over. That's the only way." And so she did, and then I couldn't get her back into the car, but I knew where she was. I was leaving her at this house, and I drove around the corner and met up with one of the officers that was already in the area and told him to follow me, that I knew where she was. So he followed me, and a couple other cop cars followed me, And I showed them where. They brought her out. And then they asked me, well, what do you want to do? I said, I want to get her help. Look at her. She's going to die. And after talking for a while, they said, well, we can call the medics and take her in for a 72-hour hold. And I was thinking, oh, praise God, I have 72 hours to figure out what to do. We took her, or we followed to the emergency room. And as soon as we got there, I could tell. It just didn't seem right. It seemed like they were already trying to figure out how to discharge her. She still was out of her mind. She wasn't making sense. They sent in a social worker to talk to her. And even the social worker said, I can't evaluate you right now because I can tell that you're still high. You're talking in circles. You're not making any sense. After a couple hours, they sent in another one. They asked her all the questions to see if they could involuntarily commit her. Do you want to kill yourself? She would say no. And then she'd say, but everything hurts so bad, it probably would feel better if I died. But that wasn't enough. The fact that she was hallucinating, seeing people, hearing people, thinking people were coming to kill her, that wasn't enough. They told us we'd have to go file a court petition for an at-risk youth. Okay, it's Friday night. So, what do I do with her until Monday? I took her home at about 5 a.m. on Saturday. Took her to my mom's house, actually. And we formulated a plan, I guess, of keeping her there until she either agreed to go to treatment or became violent trying to leave, and we would call the cops and hope that that worked. We tried to find her a place to go in Washington, a detox place, and there was nothing. Nothing, nothing, nothing. We made phone call after phone call. Even if we could get her to agree to go, there was nowhere we could take her. So, we called the place in Portland again. And we talked to her counselor, and she said, absolutely, get her there, we'll help her. But we knew that that's not really what she needed. She needed something long-term. We had done the short-term treatment. It wasn't working. We ended up driving her to Portland that night. She agreed to go. She was so scared of strangers that she didn't want anybody else to take her anywhere, so she let us drive her with the promise that it would just be detox.
Well, this has just been, it's just heart-wrenching to hear, and it is. It's one of those things you find yourself in and say, I can't believe this is happening. And then, like you've said, once you're in it, why can't I get anything done? It's the most frustrating thing a parent, it's the most scariest thing a parent would have to go through. And what I've noticed throughout this whole experience is that you didn't just tap out with God and say, I'm so mad at you for doing this. I'm so mad at you for letting this happen. You chose a different route. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. I would definitely consider myself a newborn Christian. Probably over the last couple years is really where my faith has started to build. But God has definitely sped up the process over the past year with all this going on. I had two choices. I could collapse in a puddle of tears in the corner and not know what to do and not be able to continue on with anything, which wasn't really an option when you have three other young children at home. Or I could turn it all over to him and know that he gave her to me first, so he's going to take care of her. And that's what I did. And one of the hardest nights ever, because I had gotten into the routine of checking on my other three kids and then going to bed and praying for the one that wasn't there. One night I told him, I said, I'm just going to have to trust you on this because it doesn't make any sense. So I'm going to trust, and I'm telling you right now that no matter how it ends up, if she gets better, or if she doesn't get better, or even if she dies, that it was supposed to happen. That there's a reason. whatever that reason is, we just make it clear so I know. Because I feel like there's something that I'm supposed to be doing out of this. I'm just not sure. And then, after I let that go, and after I... Because obviously my biggest fear was her dying. I just felt peaceful, and it was strange. I couldn't explain it, but I was able to live and walk throughout my life and continue on, even though I had this horrible, horrible thing happening in my life. People around me kept telling me how strong I was. You're so strong, and you're such an amazing mom. I don't know how you're doing it. And I just kept thinking, it's not me. It's God. And then that's when I was like, okay, I need to start saying that out loud because people probably should know it's God. I need to stop keeping that to myself. So then whenever people would ask me about it, I'd tell them, I don't know how I'm getting through it either, but I am, and God's getting me through it. I trust him. It's definitely strengthened my faith. I'm praying all the time, constantly. I'm constantly talking to him, constantly listening to Christian music in the car. It's just the only thing that's keeping me going through all this.
Well, it was one of those things that me and Jen had noticed that like you'd said, all of a sudden it felt sped up and we could actually watch your faith grow. But it wasn't just us that noticed that, was it? Somebody in particular was noticing.
Yeah, somebody that I did not expect to be noticing. So when we got her to the treatment place in Oregon, I went down and visited her exactly a week from the day we took her there. I visited with her some that night, and I came back the next day and saw her too. And a program that we had been looking into through Teen Challenge, a Christian program, I asked her, I said, you know, what are you excited about? What are you most excited about going into this program? And she goes, I think the religious part. Because I've watched you change. And I used to just think that was, you know, those church people. But I knew you before, and I see you now. I've watched you change. And even through everything that I've put you through, you just kept saying, I'm praying about it. So now I can see that there's something there, something real. And I didn't even really know what to say because I was stunned that she had even noticed a difference in me. I was happy that she had noticed. I was, you know, you want people to be able to see that your life's been changed, but you don't really feel like it's showing. I don't know. But that was pretty special for her to say that.
That's one of those, you know, we always talk about more is caught than taught. And we always either joke about it in one way or another that, oh, they caught that saying that I always say, or, wow, you know, they're doing their own little fake budget. That's what happens around here. But man, if there was ever a time for your child to catch it without you teaching it, that is the ultimate. So in order to help with this, go ahead and tell us a little bit about what's coming up in the future for her.
So one thing that we knew is that in order for her to really make a life change, she needed God. I had definitely learned that over the past year. And so looking into long-term treatment for her, we knew that we wanted it to be faith-based. And we had heard nothing but good things about a program called Teen Challenge. So we looked into that and we found a place for her there. And the hardest part about long-term treatment is the fact that it's not covered by insurance at all. You know, they're living there full-time. And most of these programs are, you know, 12 to 18 months. The cost can be out of reach for most people. And that was, now that I had the plan and the solution, what I thought would be the solution, I didn't have a way to make it happen. Financially, I didn't have a way to make it happen. So I took the step and the courage to share her story publicly. I started a GoFundMe and I just prayed and I said, what should I write? How do I get her story out? I just wrote it down. I wrote down what came to me and I shared it the response was overwhelming, especially from my friends and coworkers, was just amazing. People from church were really touched by it. I've had lots of people message me and send me messages of their story, ways to help. Some people that are involved in trying to get laws changed in Washington. So we've gotten a good foundation going to get her started in her program, but we still need more help.
So Paulette, during all of this, you're sitting over there not only watching this happen to your granddaughter, but you're watching your daughter go through this as well. And it's got to be pretty frustrating for you, because the fact that Desiree doesn't have any say in what's going on, you're even further removed from the whole thing. So how did that feel?
You know, it was pretty much hell. And everybody tells you about being a grandparent and how great it is. And it is. It's absolutely great. You spoil your kids, you send them home. But then when something like this happens, you realize that you're so powerless, and you're so, it's like a double whammy, because I was hurting for my granddaughter and I couldn't do anything. I was hurting for my daughter and it was bringing out Mama Bear like crazy. And I was, you know, just wanting to do something, and there was nothing I could do and except be there and pray. And so one of the things that was so helpless is because of the laws, the way they are in Washington state. So under Washington state law currently, if you have a loved one, even a minor, who is at risk of serious harm to themselves or others, you can get a 72-hour hold, supposedly. And if they admit and say, yes, I'm going to kill myself, to the person who interviews them, they can hold them for 72 hours. And if they decide in 72 hours that this person needs to be held longer, then they can go through a process with the courts and get them another 2 weeks and then maybe a month. But then you're pretty much on your own after that. But if you've got a teenage child who is at risk of doing serious harm to themselves or others, or is gravely disabled, which is what our granddaughter was, due to drug or alcohol addiction, there's absolutely nothing you can do as a parent except just stand by and watch it happen, because there is nobody that will do anything. It makes no sense to me, and it makes no sense to the other people who are losing their kids. And that's where Ricky's law is coming in, because what it's going to do, if they can get it passed, is it will make it so that you can get involuntary treatment for your teenager, and it will also cover young adults. So just because somebody turns 18 does not mean all of a sudden, okay, there's nothing you can do. They're 18 now, they're on their own. It should not be that way if you're watching your child kill themselves with drugs and not make good decisions. I don't know of an addict who's deep into their addiction who's going to say, yeah, you know what, I really want to go to treatment now. So we need to be able to step in and be their voice and be the common sense when they don't have any anymore. So in Washington state, just in 2011, there were 892 drug overdose deaths and 992 suicide deaths. Substance abuse is the second most highly correlated diagnosis with suicide, second only to depression. And many of the suicide deaths were drug and alcohol related. Untreated addiction costs $450 billion annually in federal, state, and local dollars. And for every dollar that state and federal government spends on addiction in 2005, 95.6 cents went to pay for the wreckage, and only 1.9 cents went to prevention and treatment.
Those are numbers we need to reverse.
Yes.
For sure.
About a week after getting discharged from the emergency room and taking Kasaya down to Portland, I went back to visit her to see how she was doing. She was much clearer head, she was smiling, and she gave me a thank you card. The front of the card was pre-printed. It said, "Thanks, I needed that." And on the inside of the card, she wrote, in quotations, "I needed that. I owe you a million of those. Thank you for not giving up, even though it's been a long, hard fight. I appreciate your love. You're amazing. Thank you. I need you, Mom. Which just goes to show that these kids really do need us. They need us to not give up on them, and they need us to fight for them, because when they are clear-headed, they're thankful for everything that we've done.
Well, I want to thank you both for coming in to tell this story. I know it wasn't easy, but it's something that needs to get out there and needs to talk about. For all of our listeners, the biggest thing we need right now are a few things. One, we need prayer. We need you to pray for this family. We need to pray for Kasaya. She's getting the help she needs, but we need the prayers for her. We want God to touch her and to say that, to show her the love, to show her that she's 100% worth all the effort that's going on right now. Number two, please visit the website www.gofundme.com/BeKasaya'sLight. That's BeKasaya'sLight. Definitely go visit that, read the story, and if you feel led at all, please take the time to talk with your significant other and talk about donating to this very worthy cause. And the last thing, do some research on this, the Ricky's Law, and contact your state senators, because that's actually where it stopped right now. It's passed through the House last year and was funded through the House budget. However, the Senate has stopped it. So get a hold of your state senators and let them know that this is totally unacceptable, that this thing should be moved through. It's already passed the House. Quit being the roadblock. We need to get these kids some help. Desiree Paulette, I really appreciate you taking the time to come by. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Casey.
Thank you for having us.
Well, I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Thrive Podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on iTunes. Any questions that you want answered, any questions, anything you want to talk about, send us an email at thrivepodcast@gmail.com. And we now have a website, faithandvictory.com/thrivepodcast. Have a blessed week, and we'll see you next time.